So, questions? Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, kind of regretting wasting time. It's like if we regret, put it this way, purify. Okay? Yeah? I mean, purification is the best antidote to regret. Yeah. Whether it's rational regret and constructive regret or irrational regret. Yeah, neuronic regret. True. Purification solves both of them. Yeah. And so to really, you know, I think it's very healthy. Just, I mean, be honest with ourselves. Be realistic with ourselves. There's no sense in tormenting ourselves. Okay, but the whole idea of regret is to learn. Yeah, I mean, the purpose of regret is so that we can go to the future with a happy mind. Often when we regret, we get stuck in the past, but that does no good at all. So if we have kind of regret that comes from wasting the mind, wasting the time, or doing negative actions, you know, I mean, kind of really acknowledge that in the presence of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and do the purification practice, you know, and the lights coming and streaming and purifying and or the prostrations, yeah, whatever kind of purification practice you do, and then make a determination about the future, how you want to be. Okay. So your first question was in relationship to that story that the Tibetan monks kind of accepted the death of their friend who was a good practitioner, but what about somebody who was a criminal? Or you mean like somebody who was going to have a lower rebirth? Would they be able to accept that person's death as, you know? No, well, I can never say what other people are going to do, but I would say ideally, you know, what we would aspire to do. I can't talk about what those individuals would do. That if someone is dying, I mean, you do what you can to save the life. If you can't, then you do what you can to help them die peacefully. In any case, getting anxious and freaking out doesn't help us or them. Okay. Well, see, if you think somebody's dying, being calm doesn't, again, being calm doesn't mean you're passive. Yeah? Remember, we can be calm and be very active in saving somebody's life. Or you can be calm and you can still be very active in trying to soothe somebody else's fears. And if somebody, and then your second question is kind of if somebody is very anxious about death, what can we do to help them while they're dying? Like that? I mean, it's hard to give a general thing here because I think we need so much sensitivity in each situation. Why is that person anxious? One person might be anxious because they had a fight with their brother 20 years ago and now they have a lot of regret for it and they'd like to feel that forgiven and they would like to forgive. So that person, if they're anxious for that reason when they're dying, then you try and talk to them, you know, in that way to help them forgive, to help them recognize that the other person probably forgives them and, you know, just to let go of the negative bad energy from the past and have a positive attitude for the future. Now, somebody else might be anxious about death for a totally different reason. Yeah. So we have to really figure out what's going on in each person's mind and address it the best we can. And not expect to be able to give them the miracle pill. Yeah. I mean, we can sit there and we can influence the best we can, but we shouldn't feel like, oh, I'm going to transform this person's death, you know? I mean, we do our best. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would imagine some of Stephen Levine's things. Yeah. a number of those are quite good for just kind of general public, you know, because they don't really require any particular religious belief. Let's see. Yeah, Buddhist materials. Well, in each of the Lam Rim texts, there's always, you know, there's usually a chapter about death. Yeah, I mean, if you look in Anthology of Well-Spoken Advice, I think in Taming the Monkey Mind, I have a section on death. You know, most of the Dharma books, Essence of Refined Gold, Essence of Nectar, most of them have something about death in them. Because they say this was the Buddha's first teaching about impermanence, and it was also his last one that he showed by his own death. Yeah. Well, I think the advantage of prolonging life is so that a person can use their life to practice more. Besides that, there's no use in prolonging life. I remember one of my teachers, I was saying, you know, if a person is living their life, you know, only creating negative karma, no real use prolonging the life. That doesn't mean you don't try and prolong people's life. I mean, everybody likes to live and life is valuable. But, you know, to prolong life and then everybody just creates more and more negative karma, what's the use? From a long-term view, yeah. From the view of, sure, somebody has some more happiness. Yes, that's valuable. People have some more happiness. But from a long-term view of, you know, why should we prolong life? Well, the real reason is so that people can practice more. And so was he really being very kind, telling his daughter where the gold was when he died? Okay, that's one way to look at it. But he could have also told her beforehand, so that then when he died, he could concentrate on something that was more important. I mean, I cannot tell you in one particular instance what was going on in somebody else's mind, but it just seemed to me a tragedy that the one's last thought was about gold. You know, because it seems to me, I mean, and they say, like in the thought training practice, if you know you're going to die, settle all of your worldly affairs. Give away what you have to give away, okay? Or write your will, or do it all, and do it and be done with it, so then you can just forget about that and die in peace and really use your attention on something more valuable as the time of death is approaching. So I think actually being very responsible would mean, you know, you tell somebody beforehand. Well, we could have, so you're asking about violent death, and can we say how somebody's going to die if the death is violent? It's very difficult to say. Just because somebody dies because they're violent, it doesn't mean that they're a bad person. It means that they did create some kind of karma in the past, and that karma ripened. But, you know, we have negative karma all the way until, you know, very high levels on the path that can ripen. So you can, you know, be a very good practitioner and a very spiritual person and a very kind person and still die violently because of some previously created karma from, you know, 50 million eons ago that we still haven't purified. Okay? Then to how somebody's mind is going to react if they die violently, that depends so much on the individual and what they happen to be thinking about at the time. And if they can, you know, turn their mind to the Dharma right away. Alex Berzin tells the story, you know, one experience that he had that really shocked him because he had been practicing Dharma for so long. And one day he was in Dharamsala and walking through the marketplace and he slipped. And he fell and he cracked his rib. And his first thought as this was going on was, holy shit. <You know? laughs> And he said that that just really woke him up, that here he had been practicing Dharma for so long, but in the moment of crisis, yeah. And so, but then you can take that same person and in a slightly different situation, maybe causes and conditions are such that they can really hook into the Dharma right away. It's so hard to say. Yeah, each situation is going to be very different. But the basic thing is that the more you habituate yourself with an attitude when you're alive, the easier it is for that to arise in a crisis or at death. It's causing you to feel the dilemma that Dharma friends can help you when you die, but kind of ordinary friends can't. Okay. Well, it's going to depend how your ordinary friends are. Yeah. I mean, if your ordinary friends have some spiritual streak in them, and they can respond compassionately, and they can, even they don't practice the Dharma, if they can realize that that's something important to you and help you think about it at the time that you're dying, that can help. But if your ordinary friends and relatives are just so involved in attachment that they're freaking out because you're dying, yeah, and they're crying and they're sobbing and they're hysterical, and they're clinging on and saying, don't die, I can't live without you. Or they're sitting there reminding you of all the past things you did together so that you get more and more and more attached to this life. Is that making some sense? It's a hard one, yeah. It depends very much on the individual person.
Huh? Well, I guess my thought was that it's more than he died.
That's true, he died alone, and he had to guide his own mind. But having a group of people who are helping you is much easier. Yeah? Because at the time of death, I mean, your body's going through all these changes, and your mind isn't, you know, necessarily, your mind is dependent on your body, and your mind is changing. I mean, you know how it is when you're sick. Look how it is when we're sick. Our body elements go out of whack, and so does our mind. Now, if you have somebody who's with you when you're sick who can help steer your mind in a good direction when you're sick, it can help you. Yeah? Right. If a Dharma friend comes and sobs and cries, they're not really a Dharma friend. Yeah. Okay, what would Dharma friends do? It would depend on the other person's level of practice, where they're at. Basically the important thing is help the person when they're, you know, getting ready to die to just settle all of their worldly things. You know, make offerings with their possessions, make charity, just so that they free their mind from all worry about wealth and stuff like that. Help them also to develop a sense of forgiveness so that if they're still carrying around hurt or pain from past relationships, or if they're still angry at other people and bearing grudges, help them really try and work that through and give that up, and realize that past situations are long gone and they have much greater potential than to cling on to something like that from the past. Okay? Help them to create as much positive potential as possible through making offerings. You know, as death approaches, put an image of the Buddha nearby, put a picture of their spiritual teacher. When you talk to them, talk about Dharma as much as possible when they're open and wanting to talk about it. Remind them of the Dharma. Remind them of loving kindness. Remind them of refuge in the Buddha Dharma Sangha. And, you know, imagining the Buddha and having light come pouring into you and purifying it all. Have the person also make a lot of prayers to never be separated from the altruistic intention. Have them pray, you know, to attain precious human life in the future or to be reborn in a pure land so that they can continue their practice in future lives. They have very strong prayers of what they want to happen in future lives and to always be able to meet pure Dharma teachers and good, conducive circumstances for practice. When you're with them, I mean, you have to be sensitive to their needs and all. Don't do anything that would cause them to generate anger or attachment. Yeah. Don't bring up memories or things or topics that might make them either angry or attached. Try and create a very peaceful atmosphere. Do a lot of mantra. That's very helpful, very peaceful for people. There's also some pills, and if anybody wants some, I have a stock of them. The Tibetans make these herbal pills with relic substances in them. And it's very good when somebody dies that they can take these while they're alive and they can take them orally. You can also, at the time they die, crush them and then mix them either with yogurt or with a little bit of honey. And you put that at the top of the head, you know, as the person is breathing at the end or just after they stop breathing. That helps the consciousness leave through the top, okay, which is very good. These dedication prayers for, you know, a precious human life and not to be separated from the Dharma and particularly the bodhicitta, it's very important, that one. If the person does any kind of tantric practice, you would remind them of, you know, their main deity, or you would do the self-empowerment with them. You could do purification practices with somebody. That's going back again to the thing of forgiveness and apologizing. The basic things like this. Okay, let's just sit quietly for a couple of minutes. Digest. Please take this material home with you and think about it in the upcoming days.